Part 5, Chapter 2. Turl was deep into the puzzle of Numph. Somehow and some way, Turl knew he had gotten onto something, and then somehow and some way, he had messed it up. The thing kept him awake nights and gave him a headache. For some of the things he was now going to be seen doing, he had to have the insurance of big leverage on Numph. He had lazied along with the fake mutiny measures. They weren't important anyway. He had caused the few battle planes on the other mine sites to be flown in and parked. He had picked up their arsenals and had them under seal. He had taken over control of the single remaining recon drone. On its last pass over the high mountains, he had gloated. The beautiful vein was still there, naked to view, exposed 100 feet down a 2,000-foot cliff. Pure white quartz, studded with wires and knobs of gleaming yellow gold. A fortuitous earthquake had caused the cliff face to shear off and fall into the dark depths of the canyon, exposing the fortune. The ancient volcano higher up must have spewed out a geyser of pure liquid gold in some ancient eruption and then covered it shallowly. A stream had cut the canyon through the ages, and now the slide. The site had a few disadvantages. The approaches to it showed uranium in some form or another, which put it out of bounds for a cyclo. It rested in a cliff face so sheer that it could only be mined from a lowered platform. The rest of 2,000 feet would gape dizzyingly below, and the canyon winds would batter at the mining stage. Room for machinery at the top of the cliff was minimal and precarious. Several miners' lives would be expendable at such a site. Turl only wanted the cream of it. No mining in depth down to the next pocket. Just that pocket right there, the one that was exposed. There must be a ton of gold in sight. At cyclo prices, where very scarce gold ran at very high prices, it was worth nearly 100 million credits. Credits that could bribe and buy and open the doors to unlimited personal power. He knew how to get it out. He had even worked out how to transship it to home planet and get it to arrive there undetected and recoverable. He looked at the recon drone photos again and then falsified their date and place markings with a clever bit of forgery and hid them deep in otherwise innocuous, boring files. To guarantee it, he needed leverage on Numph. Then, in the event of any slip or mishap, he would be protected. There was also the matter of getting his 10-year sentence. He thought of it as a sentence, contracted down to just another year on this cursed planet. Whatever Numph had going involved Nipe and Nipe's home planet post in accounting. Turl had gotten that far. He sat hunched over his desk, thinking. He needed leverage on the animal, and it would have to be big. Big enough to force the animal to dig without supervision, and not only that, to deliver. Well, the animal's learning was going well, and plans for other animals were all in place. He would come up with something. Turl believed in his own luck. The animals somehow would do it, and then he would vaporize them and get the gold to home planet. The unknown was Numph. With a single order, he could dismiss the animals or have them killed. He could simply withdraw permission to use the machinery. And soon the bumbling old fool, seeing no mutiny, would withdraw the blanket authorizations. The mutiny was too thin. Turl looked at the clock. It was within 2 hours of transshipment time. He got up, took his breathe mask off a peg, and a few minutes later was at the transshipment platform. Turl stood there in the swirling dust and din of pre-shipment time. The dispatch box courier had already been there, and the box, sealed and ready, lay on a corner of the platform. Char came over, interrupted in his preparation for transshipment firing, and unfriendly.
Routine check of dispatch transmission,
said Turl.
Security business.
He showed him the blanket authorization.
You'll have to be fast,
shouted Char.
No time to wait around.
He glanced at his clock. Turl scooped up the dispatch box and took it over to the car he had arrived in. He unlocked it with his master key and laid it on the seat. Nobody was watching. Char was back harassing blade machine operators to neaten up the ore. Turl adjusted the button camera on his collar tab and speedily riffled through the sheaves. They were routine reports, routine day-to-day recounting of operational data. Turl had done all this before, and it hadn't yielded anything. But there was always hope. The planetary director had to initial everything, and sometimes added data and comments. The button camera whirred, and in short order every sheet had been recorded. Turl put them back in the box, locked it, and took it over to the platform.
Everything all right,
said Char, relieved not to have another detail pushed too close to firing time.
No personal mail, nothing,
said Turl.
When do you send the dead ones back?
He indicated the morgue.
Semi-annually, as always. Get your car out of here. This is a big shipment and we're in a hurry.
Turl went back to his office. Without really hoping, he put the report copies onto a screen, one after the other, studying them. He was only interested in the ones that had Numph's writing on them. Somehow, somewhere, there was a secret communication in these reports that only Nipe in accounting could decipher. Of that, Turl was certain. There was no other way to get a communication back to home planet. When he finally got this, and when he got a real lever on the animal, he could launch his private mining mission. Turl sat late, missing dinner, studying these and older dispatch box copies until his amber eyes were dulled to a dim flicker. It was here, someplace. He was certain of it.